following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. It's going to be a busy week for us here at the Daily Gazette with the Belmont Stakes Festival at Saratoga starting on Thursday. We've been preparing for that. And, of course, if you read Sunday's paper, we gave you the lowdown on everything. We're going to have some podcast interviews later this week previewing the Belmont Stakes with our Gazette's Mike McAdam and Fox Sports' Richard Migliori. We'll talk to him later this week. And we'll also preview, hopefully, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals with Pierre McGuire. In the meantime, on Monday, I taped an interview, our usual NBA roundtable, with Mark Kesser, the voice of the NBA on ESPN Radio and Gilderland High School grad, and also a member of the Capital Region, Tim Reynolds. He covers the NBA for the Associated Press. It turned out to be a long and enjoyable interview, so we're gonna take this as a separate podcast for that. Some great commentary on the NBA Finals coming up between the Boston Celtics and Dallas Mavericks. The NBA Finals get underway Thursday at the TD Garden in Boston. So we discussed that. We also talked some other sports as well. And of course, I also got the thoughts of Mark and Tim on the passing of Bill Walton last Monday. So coming up, Mark Kesser and Tim Reynolds talk the NBA Finals. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Hi, I'm Rick Marshall from the Daily Gazette's Martial Arts Podcast. In each episode, I interview artists from around the region, from musicians and comedians to dancers, sculptors, even video game designers. After you finish the latest episode of the Parting Shots Podcast, I hope you'll give martial arts a try.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette reporter Indiana Nash. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. The NBA Finals tip off Thursday night when the Boston Celtics take on the Dallas Mavericks. Game one at the at TD Garden in Boston. And it's our annual NBA roundtable to preview the NBA Finals. And Mark Kesser, who will call the games on ESPN Radio, will be his here, and along with Tim Reynolds, who covers the NBA for the Associated Press. But I'm wondering, Tim, do you remember what basketball looks like? You've been covering the Florida Panthers lately.
It's the thing that bounces, I think.
Yeah, pucks bounce.
It is. It's going to be a very hectic couple of weeks here. I am heading to Boston, back to Florida for games one and two, then off to Dallas for games three and four. I'm not making any plans past game four of the NBA Finals just because I don't know how I'm going to handle all this. But it is an incredible problem to have. It's so much fun right now. It's going to be a great Boston-Dallas series. And to have Connor McDavid and the Florida Panthers playing for a cup, I'm a pretty lucky boy here the next couple of weeks.
I mean, Dallas Stars could have made life easier for you if they had not gotten eliminated Sunday night. Maybe play game seven and Dallas would be in the final there too. That could have been an easy.
It would have been. I don't think they'll never say it, but had it been Rangers Stars, the logistics in Dallas for the leagues would not have been pleasant when it comes to shared space and arenas and practice facilities and schedules and media schedules. I'm going to just pretend that Adam Silver and Gary Bettman sent each other a virtual high five when they avoided that problem.
I know PJ was looking forward to having Sean McDonough and all the crossover of talent on ABC. I know Al Rosenberg, who nobody knows, but our great engineer has been a fabulous radio engineer for Super Bowls and NBA Finals and World Series. Could not have wanted the Dallas Stars to be out soon enough because of all the rip down that would have happened. Now, his luck, I think there is a concert in between games one and two in Boston. So
there is.
He was paying attention to Dallas all this time. I'm like, dude, you got to rip out anyway.
Before we start talking,
hang on, Ken. Ken, let me just say this. Just so everyone knows, everyone thinks the media has agendas about teams. We don't care. I can speak for Kesty on this. We truly do not care who wins. It's about flights and hotels and how we're going to be less inconvenienced. That's all we ever root. We root for the best possible travel scenarios only. That's all we ever root for at this point in our careers.
That's right. American Airlines direct to Dallas or five stops and a Spirit and a Velo somehow to get to Edmonton. You figure it out.
Before we go any further, Tim, we have to congratulate you. You're going to be inducted into the New York State Basketball Hall of Fame.
Thank you. It's been a few weeks since I found out, and it's incredibly humbling, and it was so unexpected, and it's not deserved. There's a billion people who should go in before me. I am extremely appreciative, but it's, we're not pretty boys like Mark Hestisher, Ken. You know, we type for a living.
Yes.
It's very flattering. Thank you. I'm really honored. It was a nice moment when Rennie LaRue from the State Hall of Fame called to tell me, and I can't believe it. But I'll take it. I don't deserve it, but I'll take it.
I get that perspective, but from our side, you see a guy who can cover every sport, who does cover every sport, who seemingly can cover two stories a day, every day for 7 days a week, and to put out that volume of work and at such a high level, it makes total sense to the rest of us. I get it from your perspective because you're in the middle of this little hurricane of life, but what you do is amazing, so congratulations, Tim.
Thank you, Mark. I use AI for all of my stuff. That's how I make it.
I got to start using that for broadcast somehow.
Well, let's talk about the finals, gentlemen. We expected Boston to be here. Who the heck expected the Dallas Mavericks, the 60 out of the West, to be here?
Not when they were, what were they, Tim, 27 and 23 at one point?
26 and 23.
26 and 23. I'm looking forward to, we're already coming up with our one-on-one with the head coaches for a Wednesday for media day. And, I hope I can get Jason Kidd to, come back far enough to the beginning of the season and get some real truth serum because, I raised my hand on opening day. I mean, where did you have the Dallas Mavericks, in the Western standings come the end of the year? Where did you have them on February 1st? And then obviously when you get to the postseason, when the West was stacked and the teams that were in front of them, I mean, the teams that they have slayed just to get to this point is pretty remarkable. So the answer to your question is, I can't imagine too many, Ken, that had, that had Dallas at different kind of flag posts of the season, to be in this position they're at right now.
I'm with you from the start of the season. Like, I was not a believer at all. And then the stories that were coming out of Dallas about they just weren't having a lot of fun together, I think would be the most politically smooth way to say this. They just, the personalities just were not fitting. And so they get to the end of the year, and Brad Townsend, the great beat writer for the Dallas Morning News, who I got to know because he's a bubble alum, like a few of us. He was in the bubble with us in 2020. And Brad's a really good man, and he's sitting next to me post game after Dallas, of the regular season, to clinch. I'm sorry, it wasn't the last Friday. I think it was a Wednesday. To clinch the Southwest Division. get to 50 wins. Kyrie earned a $1 million bonus that night because they got to 50 wins. They were in a really good mood. And then they had won 16 of 18 at that point, and the defense numbers were off the charts. And I turned to Brad and I said, see you in the finals. I didn't really mean it. Like, let's be honest, I didn't really mean it.
I said, that's why he was the Hall of Fame. That's a great answer.
But it wasn't completely outside the realm of the time, because at that point, as we got to the end of the regular season, like, and we'd all been saying all year, like, somebody has to win the West. Who the heck's it going to be? Is it going to be a play-in team? Is it going to be are the Warriors going to go on a magical run? I don't think any of us thought, I shouldn't say any of us, I did not think OKC and Minnesota were ready. And I truly believe in the readiness storyline. I think you have to lose once more often than not. Stan Van Gundy, the great Stan Van Gundy, said when he was the coach in Miami a long time ago, you have to go through it once to understand how different it all is before you win it. And really, the only quote super team that ever got put together and didn't have to go through a year of pain first was the 07-08 Celtics. They just beat the heck out of everybody all year. They won, what, 66 games and won, beat Kobe and the Lakers for the title. Those Heat teams, they had to lose to Dallas. They had to go through it once. Somebody had to win it, and the way they were playing at the end of the year, I thought they had as good of a chance as anybody. Then they get to round one. They're playing a Clippers team that was not 100% because Kawhi wasn't 100%. And none of us have ever been able to figure out the Los Angeles Clippers. Incredible talent. They should have a title. They don't yet. And then it's, okay, can Luka's knee hold up? Then Luka's knee holds up. And then, oh my gosh, Kyrie is playing he's playing off the charts effective right now. And he's still offensively so brilliant. You see what their bigs are giving you. There's not a lot of holes to poke at the Dallas Mavericks anymore. So you give Nico Harrison and those guys all the credit in the world for having the courage to make two big trades in February and get guys who we all might have said, how's that guy going to help you? Well, you see what P.J. Washington and Derek Lively mean to that team. No, we didn't see it coming in December and January, but there were signs in April that this was a team that had a capability of this moment.
And I would say to Tim's point, just to cap it, because I think he expressed it correctly, was you were going to have to beat one of those big three or two of those big three in Denver, Oklahoma City, and Minnesota. And Minnesota took care of Denver for them. And so, yes, if you believe in you got to go through it. And I was with you because I had Denver, you know, getting, I think most of us had Denver. It was a safe choice having won it last year. And then the way Minnesota took them out, and then to beat Oklahoma City, who hadn't been through it yet, and then to beat Minnesota, who just comes off, you know, that incredible series against Denver, incredible comeback in Game 7 on the road. Yeah, they beat the two teams that had not gone through this portion of the schedule yet. So I'm with you. It was building. I was a little late to the party. You know, we did Games 5 and 6 of the Clippers series. In Los Angeles for Game 5, in Dallas for Game 6, and that was kind of, I didn't have my Brad Townsend moment, you know, at the end of the regular season. I had it there, where I know PJ and I, you know, we had Kyrie Irving on our post-game show, and that was a different guy. I hadn't talked to that guy since probably, you know, the end of his Cleveland run, you know, in 16 and then in 17. And so, to me, you got a sense, this is a different Kyrie Irving. Reimagined himself, you know, turned the corner, whatever it is, feels comfortable, loves the guys he plays with, whatever it was. I didn't see that during the regular year because we weren't as close, doing Dallas Mavericks games. And I think, yeah, that was the point that, you know, PJ's like, don't rule out Dallas as a place we may be, you know, come June 6th.
I do want to say this too, because I didn't accidentally gloss them over. I just didn't mention it. It's easy to say now in the rearview mirror, I was not buying Denver again. I think Denver, they were a worthy champion last year. They were a championship level team this year. Something just seemed off Something just seemed missing this year. And it could be as simple as everything changed a little bit without Bruce Brown. Maybe that was it. Maybe the pressure of going back to back, they just didn't seem like they were playing with any joy. I thought last year's Denver Nuggets were fun. There was joy there. Jamal Murray was really happy to be playing after the game got taken away from him for so long because of the knee problems. Jokic is Jokic. He's not an overly emotional guy, but I thought he had more fun last year than this year. It seemed like this year going to the arena felt like a job for them. I thought they were playing games last year. I think this year they were going to work, and that's the difference. I didn't see the same joy. So I thought top to bottom, if healthy, yes, they're going to be the toughest out in the league, including Boston. I didn't see enough happiness there. I didn't see enough belief in them that they could pull this off. So that's why I sort of, if you had me bet on somebody, I would have said I'm taking the Denver Nuggets to win it all. But if you asked me, who do I really believe, I would not have said Denver.
By the way, guys, in case you are, and the listeners here, as we tape from the Parting Shots podcast studio at my house, my dog Harper is eating her breakfast finally. So if you hear that noise.
I'll be a cat or three on my desk before long, so it'll all even out.
Meanwhile, the Boston Celtics basically cruised through the East, winning in five over Miami in the first round, winning in five over Cleveland in the second round, and sweeping Indiana. They haven't played since May 27th. Are the Celtics is this a coronation for this team?
Tim, you want to hit that first? No.
I mean, to ask if it's a coronation, I would say I'm taking Dallas in six. So, no, I don't think it's a coronation. I guess we're fast forwarding to the big finish on that. But I just.
Did they have it too easy? To your point,
I use the Los Angeles Dodgers analogy. I use the 2024, our beloved Philadelphia Phillies analogy. Mm-hmm. Like, you better go through some stuff over the year. Like, when the Dodgers go 157-5 and win the NL West every year by 1,000 games, and then they take a week off and they're playing a really good team that's desperate and sharp and has been through the fire, and then they get smoked in the division series. I kind of wonder if Boston is going to face some of that. Like, sure, they had three very close games where they had to rally late against Indiana. Like, they've had moments of temporary trouble. But they haven't been down in a series. They haven't been going to Dallas down 2-1 for game four of the NBA Finals. They haven't been put in a truly uncomfortable moment all season. Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving are going to put you in an uncomfortable situation. And you have not been in one since game seven last year against Miami. I know it's weird, but I think it will hurt them that they have not had to play with any consequence all season. Maybe they won't have to in this series. Maybe they will literally roll through an entire season. They're certainly good enough to. I just think Dallas is too good to lay down, and I don't know if Boston remembers what it's like to have to answer the bell because they haven't done it for a year.
Well, what about that game one against Indiana? I mean, the Celtics were about to lose that game, and Indiana choked it away.
It was game one. Same with game three. Game so it wasn't. Again, they knew they weren't. They knew they were playing a wounded Pacer team. If you lose a game, they're fine. We're just going to win the next day. There was no real threat. They have not been. The guys in Vegas have not moved the odds on Boston an inch, it seems like, since the playoffs started, because no matter what happens, you lose a game to Miami, you lose a home game to Miami, you lose home court in round one to Miami, the team that loves to beat you more than life itself, nobody blinked. Like, it's like, yeah, there's no Jimmy, you're fine. There's no, you know, Tyrese Halliburton is playing on one leg and then no legs. it turned out at the end when he wasn't playing at the end. You're not real worried about Indiana. Donovan Mitchell was never right in the Cleveland series. Cleveland was never going to beat the Boston Celtics. I mean, Max Strus had one of those crazy Max Strus shooting games, and it never mattered. Like, they have, there was no surprise ending ever coming in any of those series. Dallas is capable of doing it. Miami was not in any way capable of beating them, nor was Cleveland, nor was Indiana. Dallas can. I think that's the difference, is that you're playing with actual repercussions here. If I want to go speeding through my development, that's fine. The worst I'm going to do is hit a squirrel because there's no cops. If I go speeding down 95, I'm running the risk of something. That's kind of what I feel the Celtics are right now. They haven't faced any risk all season. They had a 57-game lead in the division. They won the conference by a mile. They won the number one overall seed by a mile. They haven't sweated one ounce this year.
To me, that, Ken and Tim, is the most fascinating part of this, because it's not a coordination, despite all the success they've had for all those reasons that Tim has pointed out. And look, they have the capability. We know that. We've seen it all season long. We have not seen them sweat. And the fans, who are about as brash as any fan base, you know, in America, if you, you know, get them to talk truthfully about it, you know, they want this team to hit that finish line so bad, because they know there could be bumpy roads here. So I think, you know, how they Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, have dealt with any kind of setback, which is usually, you know, hey, yeah, we'll come back tomorrow. We'll make it right. You know, that kind of that laid back attitude where you get into a best of seven series and maybe for the first time all year where you could face some trouble. That's where I want to see kind of the rubber meet the road is, you know, sure, it would have been fun to see all the different narratives out there down 0-1 against Indiana. And, you know, if they had not bounced back so well with the game two losses in the first two rounds. That's what I'm fascinated to see, what kind of fight this team has when they do face that wall for the first time, if they face that wall. That said, you know, we're set up with great matchups. You know, Boston gets the home court for whatever that matters, you know, early on, and I think there is something to it. They get back to their regular lineup, you know, if Porzingis, you know, doesn't have 38 days of rust on him. So I think, you know, we're set up for a great finals here. But you're right, there's still some work to be done if you're Boston. They realize it too, and they see the team that's coming in.
You mentioned Porzingis there, Mark, former Maverick, and of course Kyrie Irving, former Celtic. Is this an underlying storyline with the return? I mean, they've obviously played visit the old stomping grounds before, but it's obviously in the finals, stories get heightened a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun storyline, more so on the Kyrie Irving angle, because there was there was not a lot of love when Kyrie left, and some of that, you know, he brought onto himself too. He kind of, you know, egged on the fan base a little bit, the same fan base, you know, that he had said, you know, just previously that he wanted to spend the rest of his career there, or wanted to re-sign long term. So, you know, like we said, it appears to be a new Kyrie Irving. The fans are going to be on him from the first moment of the game. If there's a guy who can hope to shut it out, I guess it's him. Whatever coping strategies he's used on the court over the years, though, you know, the Boston fans can poke some holes in that. And if they're not performing well, you know, maybe he gets out of that space. But to me, that's the bigger one. You know, Porzingis spent, what was it, two and a half years in Dallas. And, you know, maybe they had reached the end of the road with he and Luka, and things had to change. But the Kyrie Irving story of the two is the one that, you know, should be a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and to that, Ken, Mark's absolutely right. They're going to be on Kyrie from the second his name gets announced as a starter. Every time he touches the ball, every time he looks at them. And I think Kyrie is going to, he's not going to fan the flames too much, but he may sprinkle a little kerosene here and there, because he wants a little sage. Yes. Will he burn sage in a highly flammable area? Yes. Because, and I think he will do all of that with a purpose. I think he doesn't care. And two, the more they hate on him, are they forgetting number 77? It'd actually be in Boston's best interest to not to. They should be doing, like, the TV stations, Celtics.com, our good friend Mark D'Amico. They should all be doing instructional classes right now on be nice to Luka. Because when Luka hears it from anyone in the stands, that team becomes Luka's mortal enemy, and he scores 46 points in the next 3 minutes. Put all the heat on Kyrie you want. Leave Luka alone. Kyrie is almost going to be a human shield for the guy who's been the best player in the playoffs. I absolutely love the fact that Kyrie wants the smoke, is going to get all the smoke, and he's going to let Luka breathe nice, clean oxygen because of all the smoke that he's going to be taking.
What would a title mean to Luka?
Like
best player in the world, right?
Yeah. I was going to say that.
He'd be him. And look, this is year six. He's been a pro the whole time. I'll tell you a very quick story. When he's getting drafted, the Heat had Goran Dragic here. Goran has known Luka since Luka was like 10 or something. Obviously, they're both Slovenian. Goran says to me before that draft, before Eurobasket, that summer, I think Eurobasket might have been the summer before. I'm getting old now. I can't remember years. But Goran says to me in the only the way that Goran can do, Dimmy. This kid, Dimmy. He's the best.
There are general managers that still don't sleep well at night. There's at least five of them that don't sleep well at night.
I mean, we all know why Vlade didn't do it. Like, we all know why Vlade didn't do it. He was not going to take the heat I firmly believe this was the whole Serbia-Slovenia thing. I think Vlade did it for that reason, and it was just such a huge. And all people want to talk about Sam Bowie stuff. This was the blunder of all time, not taking Luka Doncic. It was the blunder of all time, not taking Luka. And we forget too, like, there's been some masterful draft moves that helped bring us to where we are right now. The Celtics, Mark, am I right? The Celtics traded down for Jason Tatum?
They had the number one.
They had the one, yes.
And they got him at three.
They suckered Jason Tatum.
They suckered the Sixers.
It is unbelievable, some of the moves that were made, but what would it mean for Luka? He would be... I think he's as close to a perfect player in the league right now as there is. And we all know that there's another gear for the kid to get to. I don't think we'll ever see a dynasty in the NBA again. Not in this first apron, second apron money era. But if you don't think, if Luka can prove that he can win it, if you don't think guys, especially with the amount of salaries that guys are getting now and how they're going to go up in the next TV deal, if you don't think guys are going to line up, like are going to punch through the door in Dallas to say, please let me play with Luka Doncic, you're out of your mind. And a championship would only heighten that.
As I mentioned earlier, the Celtics haven't played since May 27th. The Mavericks haven't played since May 30th. It's basically a week off, almost like a Super Bowl type situation where you just have some time off here. Is it good? I mean, is it good to have this thing some time off before we get to the finals, or should the NBA look at maybe just up? You know, I know they set the schedule in advance, but maybe have some flexibility and get this thing going.
Yeah, that's a great point that, you know, we haven't had to, you know, really test. I can't remember. It probably has happened a lot sooner than I'm even remembering. I remember there was a World Series, what was it, in 2007 or 2008, where there was 8 or 9 days off, and you forgot that there was even a World Series when it started. And sometimes, you know, that's a function of the matchup. I think this one is so good, and there'll be enough talk, and we're kind of in that time of year, you know, where the World Series is in the crosshairs of the NFL and college football. You could easily get lost with a bad matchup and 9 days off. So I don't think it's great, obviously, but and outside of maybe a rusty first quarter, we could easily see that on Thursday night before we get settled in. But if we it's on, you know, if we have a good game, it's on. That's been a problem, too, in this postseason, is we've expected, you know, great matchups, you know, throughout from the start. And even though we've had a lot of close games where the same team seemed to win and series ended up short, you know, I think they'll survive it. I think the teams are happy. You know, we just waxed on Luka, and, you know, the guy's been playing through a sprained knee of some degree and still yet, you know, averages like 35-5 throughout that. So I'm sure the Mavericks are happy for extended time for him to get healthy. The same thing for Porzingis, to have him for an extra week. But anytime you're out, and we just had a weekend where we didn't have any NBA action. We didn't have, you know, a single NBA game to watch this weekend. That's never a good thing for the league and its partners. But I think they have a tasty enough matchup that you survive the 7, 8, 9 days and hope you get a really good game one. And obviously length of series would be huge, too.
Yep.
Yeah, Kesty's absolutely right, and of course, and he won't say it, but Ken, you covered sports media. You know, this is obviously all television's fault. I mean, I know we're getting into, you know, Pat Sajak's last week, so God forbid there be a game or something going on. It's unfortunate. I don't feel like there's the appropriate buzz because of the 9 days. However, it did allow us all 3 more days of absolutely breathless takes on why cheap shotting Caitlin Clark is okay. So I cannot get over the level of there is more hate both ways in that whole story than. And we are talking about Kyrie Irving going back to Boston, Massachusetts, after he promised them that he would stay there. I cannot figure it out. The gap isn't good for anybody. I do think the first 12 minutes of basketball on Thursday night will be not great. I don't think it'll be a great first quarter. And then after that, they'll settle in.
We'll be near Springfield. They won't send it to Springfield.
No. Springfield, the Simpson, maybe Springfield, Illinois, maybe the Simpson will mock it in a few years. And I'm sure Family Guy has probably already picked this series. Is it Family Guy that gets everything right, or is it the Simpsons that predicts the future like 9 years ahead?
The Simpsons.
It's the Simpsons, yeah. And they done a 2024 World Series episode as Bart renamed himself Bart Harper and winning World Series in 24.
Yeah, so.
Phillies and Yankees. He's already predicted it, right? Come on.
that would be so beautiful.
I don't imagine.
You know what? The Phillies have given us such great joy that I'm not going to get greedy. I'm not going to get greedy. I'm enjoying the run. I'm enjoying this season. I may go to Fenway Park Tuesday night. I know we're taping this on Monday. I may be at Fenway Park Tuesday night to watch Red Sox Braves. Will I wear Phillies apparel? I don't know.
Yeah,
I might.
Why not? Cheer for the Red Sox by wearing Phillies apparel.
And as a lifelong. As a lifelong Yankees fan, no one's ever going to shed a tear for the Yankees ever, but I tell my wife every night when I watch them, I said, just like you, Tim, it is such a joy to watch this team. I know it's Soto, and I know it's Judge, and it should be like that, but when Gerrit Cole was shut down in spring training, and I'm looking at that pitching rotation, and I'm like, who's this guy, G-I-L? I mean, what the heck? And, you know, to watch what they've done for the first third of the season. And I believe, Tim, if I'm not mistaken, when we get back to Boston for game five.
You are correct.
Right before game five is Yankees Red Sox on a Saturday and Sunday night at Fenway. So I too may be at Fenway Park at some point.
Well, I think the Phillies are there while we're in Dallas too. So it's, so I may be very distracted throughout all of that. I will say this about the Yankees real quick, even though I know we're talking NBA. We are, I believe, just 9 short years away from the next Giancarlo Stanton contract year. and I'm glad that he's really starting to earn. He is going to make more than the next NBA TV deal. He is making $73 billion over the next 11 years. Why doesn't Giancarlo Stanton just buy the rights to the next 11 years of NBA basketball? Has anybody thought about this?
I think he would keep the TNT pregame show, too, so he could be America's hero.
God, I wish we could talk about this on air, Kelsey. I wish we could. I know we can't, but boy, do I have things to say. Well, Mark can't say this, but I'm going to say this right now without knowing what's going to happen. If you think those guys are going anywhere, you're out of your minds.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Right. Agreed. In some form.
Well, yes, in some form. Yes.
Well, let's wrap this up. Unfortunately, last Monday we learned of the passing of Bill Walton, the Basketball Hall of Famer. Extraordinary broadcaster, you know, and basketball broadcast with him became secondary with him, you know, just expound, you know, talk about life and his experiences. Quick thought, gentlemen, on Bill Walton.
I didn't get to spend as much time with him as I wish I could have because we ran in so many similar circles, but not similar enough, you know, to professionally work together. So all of my Bill Walton stories are secondhand from others, you know, including Dave Pasch, who spent, you know, 12 amazing years riding alongside of him. And, of course, working with PJ Carlissimo and hearing his side. And Mike Breen told a terrific story. We were at dinner, I think, after game 4 in Indianapolis. And it was a similar story that he told Malik Andrews. And I encourage folks, if they haven't seen it on social media, about how Bill took care of Mike's dad, when Mike and his brother brought his father out west, earlier when his dad was still alive. It's just an amazing story. My only interaction with him, and look, he'd been on, you know, we've had so many incarnations of talk shows at ESPN Radio, so I can't remember which one, but I'll just say the Dan Patrick Show. And Bill Walton used to come on as a guest, and Dan would ask one question, and then we'd always run over on the segment. You know, network radio, we always have a hard time, a hard out, they call it, and you can't get around it. And so here comes my time in, I don't know, 2007, 2008. I'm the studio host for our NBA coverage, and they say, Bill Walton's going to be your guest. And I'm like, well, how's that going to work? Our segments are like 4 minutes long. And they said, well, we'll tape him, and then we'll edit it. And I said, all right, that's a fair way to go about it. So Bill gets on the phone, we have our pleasantries. Jim Durham's still alive at that point, and the two of them, you know, had worked many of the Team USA leading games on the way to the Olympics, so we had something in common to talk about. And then we get to taping, and there's a little button in the radio studio that's called reset, and you press that when you want the clock to start over so you know how long your interview's going. Well, I just wanted to hit that restart button after I asked my first question, just to see how long Bill would go, and it hit the 2-minute mark, and it hit the 4-minute mark, and he's branching off into, you know, the wild rivers of the Northwest and how that relates to the University of Hawaii football team and great lessons that he learned at UCLA. Now we're at the 6-minute mark and the 9-minute mark, and my producer's in my ear saying, you have to cut him off. So I let him go 13 minutes. I thanked Bill for his time, and then I told my producer, good luck editing that down to 4 minutes. It was brilliant. It was 13, and I wish I had that on tape because it was remarkable. His stream of consciousness and, his just love of his fellow human for me was the two things I took away from Bill.
So I had only one, direct, and it was semi-direct interaction with Bill. And it was when I was at the newspaper off exit 4, Ken, that shall not be named in your presence, of course. But, they sent me down to the Garden to cover. It had to be a Knicks playoff game. I don't know what else it would have been. And I'm on the floor somehow. This was obviously a very different world. And I'm on the floor a few hours before the game, and Bill Walton is there in dress shirt, dress pants, tie, and shoes, and he's not moving great because of his chronic foot problems, and he's in, you know, hard black dress leather shoes, and he's just shooting, and a rebound sort of bounces over my way. And he goes, I can't remember if he asked me if I wanted to play pig or horse. I don't remember that detail. But I know we were suddenly playing pig, I believe, or horse. Doesn't really matter. I don't think we finished the game. And as you might expect, Bill was 45, 50 years old then, probably, dressed to go to work. I was 25 years and a number of pounds smaller, and I had no chance of beating Bill Walton in this game. And I never forgot that I've shot baskets at Madison Square Garden with Bill Walton. Like, and that's one of the coolest things that this, the gifts of this job has ever given me. I was actually driving home from Panthers practice when the news came. When we got the email from Mark Broussard at the NBA office, because he announced on behalf of the family that Bill Walton had passed. And immediately at that point, you have to start writing. So I pull over off the highway. I find a Starbucks. I go in and just write for an hour and a half. The tributes come pouring in. I have gotten more. I don't get a lot of emails from readers. And usually when you get emails from readers, they are cynical, not worth noticing, not worth reading. It's usually profane and just, you know, with the world in which we live. I have gotten more feedback, more people who just want to talk about Bill Walton, people I've never heard from and will never hear from again, that just want to share what Bill Walton meant to them. Because of that story, they find my email because there's a link in the story, the obituary that I wrote. There was a link to my email at the bottom of it, and people just reach out. The outpouring from people, I mean, this is just a huge loss for the game. And I think there's going to be a moment. There was a moment of silence the other night. I think there's going to be one Thursday in Boston. If not, it's a huge oversight because there should be. He was just one of the. They say this all the time, there'll never be another. There's just never going to be another Bill Walton. I mean, I've known people who knew him, the longtime trainer in Miami, the longtime athletic trainer in Miami, the late Ron Culp, had Bill when he was the trainer in Portland. And he could tell Bill Walton stories for an hour without taking a breath. And Ron Culp never said two words, by the way. Ron Culp was just a quiet guy. And he would talk about Bill Walton for an hour. And at the end of it, you couldn't see straight because you were laughing and crying so hard at the depth of the stories. And just such a huge loss for the game. The fact that very few very few people knew how really sick he was at the end, how he loved the Pac-12, how he loved UCLA, loved telling stories, loved connecting with people. We need more Bill Waltons. We just need more Bill Waltons, and we'll never have another Bill Walton. But damn it, we should all be trying to act a little more like Bill Walton.
Going to miss him saying Conference of Champions.
Isn't there a certain beauty, a certain symmetry to he will never have to see the Pac-12 be whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
He loved the Pac-12 when it was really the Pac-12. That's... I didn't know him. I didn't pretend to know him. But, man, I'm going to miss seeing a storyteller of that ilk. Because now all we have are P.J. Carlissimo and Mark Kestisher. We can tell stories like that.
Not enough light in our lives to, you're right, 100%, Tim. I mean, look, he was the freest of free spirits, who encouraged everyone to have light in their lives. And he had so much in his, so much that you didn't even need to know him. I'm the same, whether it's, on social media platforms that are, disgustingly overrun by negativity, that for those few precious hours, when all I saw was positivity, about Bill, it took someone of, his stature, to turn that cesspool around, and then even just to talk to people who actually knew him. We had two different times where we were on the air that night in Indiana when they had the moment of silence, and, Rick Carlisle told us the most amazing stories about Bill Walton, you know, from his Celtics days on that 86 team. And PJ broke down a couple times. I mean, it, you know, on air and off air. I mean, Bill Walton meant that much. And, you know, and PJ also, you know, had communicated to me, and I think as Tim had pointed out, like, most nobody knew. Nobody knew. They knew something was up when he wasn't at the Final Four. PJ saw him at the All-Star game in Indianapolis. He and Bill Murray, I remember looking to my left, and it was Bill Walton, Bill Murray, and PJ Carlissimo, you know, a half hour before. And, you know, I said, did he look sick at that time? This is in mid-February. And he's like, no. And we had heard that, you know, he had had, you know, some good days a few weeks back. And so maybe whatever it was that we didn't know about, you know, maybe there was some recovery coming. So it caught everybody, even those close to him, you know, by surprise, and made it, you know, that much more sad on that particular day. But as the reflections continued throughout the day and in the days since, you know, I think we're all better for either of knowing him or have known him through someone else or through all the stories that were told.
Yeah, he could have been.
Let me just throw this.
Go ahead.
Ken, I'm sorry. There, just to give an example of, we could have done the whole pod on Larry Bird, but I'm sorry, I'm Bill Walton. To give an example, Larry Bird never says, and Larry Bird is a very, you can't find Larry Bird. It's very rare to find Larry Bird. I can't believe he did that commercial. I can't believe he did the getting caught in your attic commercial. I can't believe he did that. I'm writing, I wrote the story. I wrote, you know, the obituary about Bill. And I get an email about 6 o'clock from a person saying, I represent Larry Bird. He would very much appreciate getting this statement into the story. You don't hear from Larry Bird. And that speaks to the importance of Bill Walton, that Larry felt compelled to write a statement, which he did. He wrote it himself. I know Tim Bontemps of ESPN got it. I got it. I don't know who else got it. Larry doesn't ever look to be quoted. Bill Walton was important enough for him to reach out and, or have his team reach out and say, Larry would like to say a few words about Bill. And that will not, that doesn't happen except for extraordinary circumstances. And it just speaks to the level of extraordinary person that Bill Walton was.
Well, Bill Walton could have been a Philadelphia 76er in 1973 had the Sixers not lost the coin flip for the number one pick to the Portland Trailblazers. And, of course, 4 years later, he haunts my Sixers by coming back from a 2-game-to-none deficit to win that series 4-2. I will always maintain that Daryl Dawkins getting in a fight with Maurice Lucas turned that series around, and George McGinnis couldn't hit the backside of a car in that series. And there you go.
So Kesty's here burying his soul. Oh, my God, we're going to miss him so much. I'm here burying my soul. I'm going to miss him so much. Then Shotzi comes on. He's like, I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad he's gone.
Oh, that was some of my favorite times in my early years with Dr. Jack. And I'm sure, Tim, you got a lot of
Oh, my Jack. Goodness.
That's a 77 yes. Portland, Philly. I mean, that was some of the best conversations that we had over the years.
Yeah, and of course, in that 1970, that's one of my bitter memories of my childhood. Later that year, Danny Ozark forgetting to put Jerry Martin in left field in Game 3 of the NLCS against the Dodgers on what turned out to be Black Friday. And then Leon Sickle in 1980 and now in the classic. But I'm not a bitter man.
I love it. It brings us so much joy, but it's always that heartbreak that you can detail.
Oh, well.
Tune in next week when we talk about how RPI got away with an extra guy on the ice penalty.
This is great, gentlemen. I appreciate a few minutes. Have fun with the finals. And, oh, by the way, are you guys sad that you have to be doing the finals with the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I'm not pleased. I'm so, well, for starters, I'm glad I'm not there from what I'm hearing about how it's going to be in Saratoga this weekend. I am old. I'm very old. And I grew up in a Saratoga where it was 24 days, where it was 4 weeks. I'm glad that Belmont's there. Don't get me wrong. I think it's awesome. got to stop ruining Saratoga. Saratoga has to be charming and quaint. It can't be 3 months of the summer anymore. It can't. Stop ruining Saratoga. There's my rant. But I would have loved to have been there.
And as an old guy, and I'm hearing how much all the golf course greens fees are going up.
Yep. And the hotels.
And this weekend in particular, yeah, it's look, hey, I have relatives who have homes, you know, within blocks of the track. So good on them, and they're all doing well. But it's yeah, it's priced out a lot of folks, and it you know, it'll be fine just to turn on the TV and see what it looks like from a few hours away.
Yeah, the race is sold
Mark,
out.
It's priced out horsemen. It's priced out some horsemen from going.
Like, that's true.
I mean, we had Shug McGahey down here at Gulfstream a couple months ago now. Shug is one of the gentlemen of racing. Claude R. McGahey III is a distinguished gentleman of racing. It takes a lot to anger Shug. Shug is angry at what Saratoga has become, and I do not blame him.
Interesting. So we'll leave it on that note, and of course, yes, we're getting prepared for it. We've been, you know, covering the heck out of it, and I'll plug us or our guys, Mike McAdam. We obviously doing a great job. We'll be up there all week covering those races, and it'll be a lot of fun.
This was a good time because we started with hockey. We did hit some NBA. We got some WNBA in. I think we had Major League Baseball for a few minutes. And horse racing. So I think this was an all-encompassing 50 minutes. I approve, Mark.
Cats and seven. Cats and seven.
I might go that way. I just watching that series against the Rangers. They wore the Rangers out. The Rangers in the third period, they were dead.
They were done.
The Rangers were lucky to win Game 3. That's the way the Panthers were dominating that game.
It helped the Panthers that Lavi kept putting Rempe in the lineup and then couldn't play him.
Yeah.
So the Rangers were a man down the whole series.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
All I know is they're still honking horns in Edmonton, Alberta. So it's the San Antonio of the North.
But I want to congratulate Edmonton on winning the Canadian championship. But I don't think Canada has won the Stanley Cup since Hawaii and Alaska were admitted to the Union, give or take.
It's been a while.
And gosh darn it, Paul Maurice deserves a Stanley Cup. Cats and seven.
Well, my prediction a little bit later when I hopefully get a chance to talk with Pierre Aguirre on a later podcast. So, gentlemen, appreciate a few minutes, and it's a lot of fun, as usual.
Thank you, boys.
As usual. Safe travels. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, I'll wrap up the we'll wrap up the podcast in just a moment. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
I'm Daily Gazette news columnist Andrew Waite and host of the Weighing In podcast, which takes you inside my award-winning featured news column by offering the backstory, thought process, and interviews that inform my work. Plus, readers have their chance to respond. The Weighing In podcast is available at dailygazette.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Frank Caliendo, pretending to be Morgan Freeman, maybe even a little bit of John Madden or Robert Downey Jr., comedian, impressionist, playboy, philanthropist, maybe not the last two. And you're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast, and we'll have the winners of the Daily Gazette's Auto Racing Contest in my next podcast later this week, most likely posting it either Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll see how things work out, but we'll have the winners for that as well. And, of course, coming up my next podcast, Gazette's Mike McAdam and Fox Sports' Richard Miglior, we're going to talk the Belmont Stakes Saratoga. There might not be a Triple Crown winner, but there's a lot of excitement with the Belmont moving to Saratoga for the next 2 years because of reconstruction at Belmont Park down in Elmont. And a lot of excitement. As I said, people are talking about a lot of buzz for this event. And the race on Saturday, the Belmont Stakes Day, is sold out. So, but of course, you can follow our coverage at DailyGazette.com. Mike McAdam as well, Mike_McAdam on X. So we're going to have some fun this week. So we'll talk horse racing and hopefully some NHL Stanley Cup Finals lining up. I'll try to line up Pierre McGuire. We've talked here throughout the playoffs about the everything going on. So we know it's the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. That will start Saturday down in Sunrise, Florida. So that'll do it for this podcast. Just remember, the views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette company. And I'd also like to thank Mark Ketcher and Tim Reynolds for coming on. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette company. I am Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.